Welcome back to Rude Dude.
Welcome to the Rude Dude Recovery Podcast with your host and resident wet brains, Cam and Hen, two dudes navigating the waves of wellness. Thanks for being here. Your presence is what makes this journey worthwhile. On today's episode, the dudes discuss one of the most important questions in recovery. What's stopping you from getting sober? The first step is to stop drinking or using, so we discuss and myth bust the FAQs or most common concerns that people have about taking the leap. Learn how to start the journey to the life you deserve, and please enjoy the Rude Dude Recovery Show. Down, 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 and if I were you, where are you? I'd lay low. Welcome back to the Rude Dude Podcast, the show where we take some weight off your plate and put the pep back in your step and remind you that you are loved. I am Henry, one of your resident wet brains and hosts, with my buddy, Octopus Head, Cameron Davis, the Cree. How are you there, the Cree?
Well, you know what, man? I'm actually in a good mood today. I had a half day at work, and yeah, last week I did have the octopus hat on, but you're fucking up, dude. I got an owl hat on today, a crocheted owl hat. Do you see this? It kind of looks like tits on my head if you look really hard. It looks fantastic. So, you know, throwing a curveball today initially, not saying I'm just okay. So I'm excited to be on the pod today, man. Sun's shining. It is California dreaming, the one thing I will miss when I do leave.
Well, I am fired up, and I also have something that'll get you fired up.
Oh, he's got a V8, dude. There we go. V8. You know what, dude, is so funny. The other day, I'm standing outside at 5 a.m. drinking my V8 like I do normally. I was sitting there, and I was like, I wonder if Henry still drinks V8s, man. And that was just a random thought. And I was like, I sure hope he does.
I put away vegan whole food drinks for pure meth, also known as C4, for a little while. But I'm trying to find my way back to Jesus. So.
Well, good, dude. Good, good. Ash is all about those C4s because she heard you talking about them. And I bought like the bombsicle one, and she is all about it.
Dude, their flavors are unrivaled. You see, I still got the 52 up because I just think it looks cool, and it's still full. But we thought the reels looked neat last week, so I'm in this other goofy-ass Hawaiian shirt. Cameron's got his goofy-ass hat. But I'm feeling good. Thanks for asking. I don't think you did. But I'm feeling good. And I guess without further ado, we can just get into the topic, huh?
Let's do that, man. Let's do that.
Today, we're asking the very important question, what's keeping you from getting sober? What's stopping you from either completely stopping drinking or cutting back? Because we also have a lot of listeners who probably don't fancy themselves alcoholics, and they may not be, but also sometimes kind of wish they would drink a little less, or sometimes maybe get that anxiety when they do drink and they think about drinking less, but they never stop or they never cut back. So we're going to try to dig into some of the most common issues that we've had and other people have with quitting drinking, and maybe help some people make that decision.
Yeah, man. Eloquently said. A very interesting topic. Probably the most important piece, really, because there's this huge laundry list of things that was, you know, initially keeping me from taking the plunge, shall I say. And since we're getting on that, I'll go to my first one. I said it in my story, and I've said it on here on the anxiety episode and everything, but one of the number one things for me was when I drank, I wasn't anxious. I wasn't worried about thoughts going on in my head. I wasn't worried about, you know, this and that, panic attacks, this, because when I drank, those things were non-existent. So the thought of not being able to lean on that, aka my crutch, for my mental health issues, which is super healthy, by the way. Don't do what I did. You know, it's really not a good idea. It doesn't work out very well. Was terrifying to me, because how was I ever going to wake up in the morning with the thoughts, with the shakes, with the tight chest and everything that anxiety brings, without having that beer to calm me down. So for me, that's number one. That was one of the hugest factors for me, man. I really struggled with it because I was just so afraid of being afraid. And you know, that's the antithesis of an anxiety disorder, but losing that really scared me, bro. How about you?
That is a huge one. I think that is a very common one. For me, I had the same issue, but I don't think I thought of it as anxiety. I also have attention deficit hyperactive disorder, and my brain is always going a million miles a minute. Mm-hmm. Now, in retrospect, I think that it probably was anxiety. My racing thoughts is that basically is what anxiety is. But I had the same experience. You know, what am I going to do with this, that, blah, blah, blah. And I get a few drinks in me. I don't give a fuck about any of that shit. But the important part to take away from that is we're becoming doctors and we're self-medicating and we're medicating ourselves with poison that like kills your brain cells and eats your stomach lining and all that. Mm-hmm. So my takeaway from what you were saying is that, does it relieve our stress momentarily, whatever? Yes. But is that a safe, proper, effective way to manage anxiety? No.
No,
absolutely not. So if that's one of your things, you know, I guess my answer would be maybe we should be looking into psychiatry, therapy, and actual medication that is made for anxiety that's potentially less harmful than alcohol.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And that's a hill I will ultra perish on. I think it's super hilarious how we can sit there and do that, right? Like, hey, I'm going to self-medicate with this substance that in turn actually just makes my anxiety worse.
Yes.
I think that's the funniest part, right? Like, oh, hey, yeah. I can't sleep at night, so I'm going to drink to go to sleep. Well, little do you know, you're actually not getting restful sleep when you're drinking because your body's in hyperactive overdrive mode trying to digest the liquor. And then when you wake up, you're jamming right up your ass with cortisol. So then you wake up just this anxious mess. But that alcohol definitely helps me with my anxiety, right? I think it's the greatest conundrum of all, man. But yes, like Henry said, go talk to somebody. I'm a big advocate of therapy. Henry is as well. It's helped me tremendously. Don't be going to, you know, these backdoor cures that really are just pouring gas on the fire.
Before we move on, Kristen's cut way back on drinking since she didn't drink a lot, but now she rarely drinks, like maybe once a month, if that. And she said that one of the worst parts about drinking for her now that she's like had a lot of time kind of being clean is the anxiety that comes the next morning. She always feels, not even like from a sickness of a hangover, but like she's like, I just get this, like I should be doing something and I want to do stuff and I can't, and like she calls it anxiety. She's like, that's like one of the worst parts now that I'm used to mostly feeling good all the time. So it's funny, like you pointed out, we're fighting anxiety with something that causes anxiety.
Yeah, dude, it's hilarious, man. And I'm glad that she can make that connection because it's vitally important. Like some people can sit here and go, oh, hey, I don't even know what's going on. But yeah, it's definitely a catalyst and it's not a cure by any sense of the mean. I mean, any sense of the word. It's just straight ass, dude. That's all I really got to say about it. So if you're, like I said, I'll reiterate it. If you are using alcohol to deal with your anxiety or your mental health issues or drugs, that's not going to help you at all. You're actually just making it worse.
Let's find a better solution.
Yeah, a healthier one.
Also, guys, I want to apologize because I was sick this week. So if you're on video and you see my super red ass Rudolph nose or see me roll away to blow my nose away from the microphone, my apologies. But I was sick this week, so that's why there's a little something in my throat. But go ahead, Cam. Next one.
All right, dude. So the next one for me was I was terribly afraid of losing, in air quotes, friends. People that were, you know, like-minded thinkers like I was, you know, like the party still wasn't over yet. I'd look around and I'd see, you know, other friends who were who were highly successful or on their way to being highly successful. And, you know, yeah, you'd see them with a glass of wine. I was more interested in the people that wanted to go to the bar with me at 8 a.m. in the morning and drink all day, right? Mm-hmm. You know, those people, those were my real friends, right? Those are my real friends. So for me, one of those trepidations that I had was I was going to lose those people. These are people I was really close with. I had spent all these drunk blackout nights with them. I'd had these in-depth conversations that I thought I was having with them.
You don't fucking remember.
That I couldn't tell you a single one to this day, you know, and I'm not saying these people are necessarily bad people, but if I could tell you something about those people, I'm not in contact with any of those people today. Not one of them. And this was just a huge reservation for me. I thought I couldn't live without these people. And lo and behold, here I am thriving. So that was a big one for me, man. What do you think about that one?
I was going to say, I was glad I literally came to the notes to put it in there and I already saw it in there. You know, this is not, like you said, to put those people down, but these relationships that we have in our using days, and especially when it comes to drugs too, those relationships are transactional. Like, can you get stuff? Can you get stuff? Do you have anything? And the same thing, like you said, with the people who sit at the bar, you know, my addition is like, I wanted people who wouldn't hold me accountable. I wanted people who would go to the bar at 10 a.m. or whatever and be like, fuck yeah, dude, let's, oh, shots, yeah, let's do it. Not people who would be like, wait, why are you going to the bar at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday? You know? So I purposefully sought out the people that were not the best quality of people, that weren't, I sought out people who weren't going to hold me accountable. And everything we've ever talked about in this podcast that we look for in a friend is someone who does hold you accountable, right? So I was purposely seeking out the opposite kind of people. And like you said, they're not bad people, whatever. And you could remain friends with them. But if all those people ever want to do is go to the bar, like they never have any other activity that doesn't involve drinking, maybe they're not that good a friend, you know, like maybe, or just maybe you've grown apart or you've outgrown them or you don't need to spend time with them anymore. Or you can invite them and see if you have a friendship outside of alcohol and be like, hey, bro, I was going to play basketball over here on Friday. Do you want to come? And if they're like, no, then it's like, well, maybe you're not. Hey, do you want to go to the gym? No, I'm good. You know, maybe they aren't your kind of people anymore. And we do mourn those friendships and we worry about it, but it's really not as detrimental or heavy as we make it up to be in our mind.
Yeah, in the beginning, man, it can seem like the end of the world. And that's a great way to put it, like detrimental, right? Like, hey, I can still see these people. I'm friends with them on Facebook and whatnot. And they're still doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And to me, that just doesn't sit right with me. You know, it's the type of hobby that I had. Like I had a neighbor across the way from me in my apartment when I was in deep in my active addiction. And literally all he did was drink alcohol. And I used him. Like you said, it was transactional. When I didn't have money to buy booze, guess what? He had Bud Light Platinums over there. The grossest fucking beer on the planet. But I would go over there and I would drink it with him, right? And he was just happy to have someone sit there and drink with him and watch the fucking Price is Right.
You like, probably didn't even like the fucking guy.
No, not really, dude. He was a Charger fan. He was a complete fucking asshole.
You probably judged him for being a drunk, even though you were one too.
Absolutely, dude. I said, look at this guy. He's an alcoholic. He's been to prison. You're like, dude, I'm so glad I'm not this guy, dude. Hey, dude, let me get a Bud Light Platinum, please. But that's neither here nor there, man. It was just losing the party friends for me, man. I thought that was going to be a huge deal. And lo and behold, man, it really wasn't as time has moved on. And I'm grateful for that. I see the next one on this list is one that you put here. You want to kick this one off?
Yeah. So we have for one of the most common reasons is either like unwillingness or denial. And I think there's been kind of a wave recently where people are choosing not to drink just for like health reasons and whatever, which I think is awesome. And I think it's important to point out that you don't have to say I'm an alcoholic to either stop or cut back on drinking. You don't have to say like, I am as bad as someone who needs to go to rehab and I have a major problem. If you want to cut back, and here's one of the distinctions that we make in the program that people can use for their life is like, does it cause unmanageability? Well, what's unmanageability? Okay. Do you often lose your wallet? Do you often lose your car keys? Did you leave your car somewhere and you can't find it? Did you leave your car somewhere and then you have to ask your wife to take you back in the morning and she's upset you left your car? You know what I mean? Are you late for work often? Did you stop going to the gym, which you like to do because you don't feel like it? Like, unmanageability can look like a lot of different things, you know, but particularly getting in trouble with work and that kind of a thing. So I think that's a good question to ask yourself. Like, if you're in denial or if you're not sure, like, is this causing me trouble? Like, oh, well, I throw up every morning when I wake up, or, oh, I don't have an appetite that much anymore and I only eat junk food. You know, any kind of thing, like any kind of unmanageability, any unwanted consequence can be reason enough for you to stop or cut back. And it doesn't make you an alcoholic. It just makes you someone who cares about your health and well-being that wants to clean up your act a little bit.
I love that, dude. And before I hit you with my response to that wonderfully eloquent segment that you just said, you know what's hilarious, man, is it is kind of a hype, right? People are literally paying $20 for a 12-pack of White Claw non-alcoholic beverages, bro.
Yeah.
Like dude, as a sparkling water aficionado over here, dude, Captain Bubbly,
yeah,
I don't understand, dude. How are you paying $20 for a flavored sparkling water when you can walk down the fucking sparkling water aisle and get an 8-pack for $6, $3 maybe, $4?
Wow. People, I didn't even think about that.
$20 for non-alcoholic White Claws. Anyways, that's just fucking ridiculous. So if you are listening and you have bought those, just know I'm judging you harshly.
Shame.
Shame, dude. But what you said is really important, man. Hey, have we had any of these conversations with your spouse or your loved ones or your friends that you woke up the next morning and we don't remember having? How often is that happening? Like you said, where did I park my car last night? Or, hey, I'm spending a little bit too much money when I go out on these weekends. You know, there's a lot of things that alcohol and drug use bring with it. And if you're cognizant enough and you're not too deep and you can recognize it, then make a change. And like Henry said, you don't have to be a Cameron or a Henry in this scenario. You can just be somebody who is trying to make a positive change in your life. And I think that's fantastic. So if you sit back and you're listening to this episode, take a look at yourself. Literally sit there and say, hey, you know, every time I drink, you know, like Kristen, I wake up and I feel anxious as fuck. And I don't like that. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to cut back on drinking. That's a prime example of what Henry was just talking about. But only you can make that change, right? So if it's something that's hanging on your heart, listen to yourself, man. I'm a big proponent of that. I knew I wanted to quit drinking for a trillion years, right? I always knew I wanted to stop. But I just never pulled the trigger until I pulled the trigger, right? If your little conscience is telling you, hey, let's cut this back, or let's see what life looks like without this, give it a shot. You might like it, actually.
You brought up a great point, too. Let's say, and this is kind of a big leap, but let's say it causes you zero problems. I think that's a big stretch, but maybe zero problems. But you spend $400 every weekend on alcohol. Mm-hmm. Now, Cameron's going to tell you how much money if you put $400 into an S&P 500 index fund every weekend, you would have stupid dough, 30% gains.
Correct.
But, you know, anything, like if it's just the money alone, if you realize, oh, fuck, I only got $76 to last me through the whole week because I freaking thought I was a baller in the club and I bought $1,000, you know, whatever. That's another unmanageability thing, because you're having unmanageability issues around your monies.
Yeah, dude, and that's a big thing, right? Like, you spend a bunch of money, you think you're rich, We're buying top shelf whiskeys, or you know, we're buying a bunch of blow or whatever the hell we're doing.
Or we're doing the whole impressing other people thing and acting like we got it. Oh, yeah, yeah, threw it on my tab, dude. I was buying everybody shots, dude. Bro. I'd run myself broke buying people shots.
God damn, dude.
Yeah, next round's on me, dog. I don't think you had that problem, but I sure did.
Dude, I would do it sometimes, man. Like when we were at those players nights, like, oh, dude, we're all doing kamikaze shots. Like I'd be buying them for everybody. Like I was the greatest thing since sliced bread, man. And then I'd be sitting there in my bathroom throwing up black stuff. Ask Justin about that story. That's fantastic. Kamikaze United players, old cam cakes here. I hit the old Jesus vomit, dude. I was like literally like crucified at like 3 a.m. and threw up like the purge black stuff. Oh my God, dude. Kamikaze and sushi. I think that was that's what that was, dude. Not a recipe for success.
I threw up the purge black stuff on your mom's white carpet.
Yeah, that was actually red wine, Hoss. After we got out of the David Bowie labyrinth, dude, that's a story that'll never fade, dude. It'll never fade, dude. He was there with his dong out and everything, bro.
Literally a pool house. We couldn't find the door. It's like a garage. We couldn't figure out how to get out.
I wish I was joking, dude. Like when I think about it, now I'm getting anxious because I literally couldn't get the fuck out of there, dude. Get out of there.
Oh my God. To get outside and hold on to the grass so we didn't get thrown off the fucking earth.
Lord. All right, dude. I'm going to go to my next one and we'll tag team after this. Dealing with, you've heard me say it, Henry say it, you'll hear it if you're in the rooms a bunch. One other thing that I didn't think I was ever going to be able to handle sober was life on life's terms. And what I mean by that is, how was I ever going to be able to deal with the trials and the tribulations that life brings? A job loss, a death of a loved one, financial hardship, relationship issues, just a day that I would wake up not feeling it. How was I going to deal with that? How was I going to deal with the injustices that were happening to me and me only? Or, hey, the relationships with some of my friends are falling apart. Yeah, that's what I'm saying, right? In my world, that's what it looked like.
The world, which was specifically out to only get you.
That's it, man. Everybody was praying on my downfall, man. And how was I supposed to deal with it? So, I literally didn't think that was humanly possible. Because how are you supposed to deal with sad feelings without drinking it away? How am I supposed to deal with being angry without drinking that anger away to calm myself down? How am I supposed to be happy when the sun's out and I'm having a good time without drinking? How do I deal with life without those things? And that one actually might be up there really kind of tied neck and neck with the anxiety one for me. This was a huge fucking problem. And it held me back for, you know, more years than I care to really tell. How about you, dude? Did you struggle with that one as much as I did? Because that was a big deal for me.
Absolutely. And what I'm thinking as you're saying this is, what are we doing again? We're self-medicating. Mm-hmm. And one thing that Randall Brown actually pointed out to me, shout out to the legend, the GOAT, Randall Brown.
RB, what it is, Hoss, what it is.
For him if you're on the internet.
Just RB.
Are you on the internet?
Just on the interwebs.
You've ever heard of this little thing called the internet?
That's a good voice. You should talk like that the whole time.
Okay, so what Randall Brown went ahead and told me, my forehead's big as fuck after this haircut, dude.
No, God, dude.
Damn, boy.
I have a fucking six head, bro. Don't talk to me about big foreheads. Why do you think I'm always wearing hats?
Maybe it's my ring light on extra bright that's just magnifying the size of my fucking forehead.
It looks good, dude. Don't worry.
All right, here we go, wet brains. Randall Brown talked about media and how our whole entire life we are conditioned by movies and television. Oh, you've had a rough day. Here's a drink. Oh, man, it's been a hard day. I need a drink. Oh, this is wearing me out. I need a drink. Oh, this is stressing me out. So we've been taught and programmed our whole entire life that the solution to a hard day is a drink. And that's what we all think. And that's how we all are programmed. And like, yeah, that's nice. It's, you know, you get some temporary relief. But one of the things I learned in the program and that we learn is that what did I just say? Temporary relief. Because guess what? When you wake up in the morning with a hangover, that problem that you were trying to drink away is still there. And it didn't go away. And it only is like probably worse because now you just feel like shit and you still have the same problem you were trying to drink away. And like you said, it seems hard. It seems impossible. It seems very undesirable. But millions of people are living life on life's terms. And we talk about like the victim mentality. That's kind of a thing that we have to work hard to get out of. Like, life's not doing it to you. No one's out to specifically get you. There are probably a few people preying on your downfall, but it's not the universe and it's not God or your understanding of God. It's also because you probably make shitty decisions and do stupid shit. You know, that was something we talked about, stuff that comes back to you that we don't realize is, you know, actually kind of with the Ray Glimp thing where he said, everything is because of me. You know, there's a lot of stuff that we don't think is a result of our actions, but it really is, at least in some roundabout way. But life on life's terms is a big one, man. Stuff happens. And it's like, if you can take the attitude of, okay, this happened, what am I going to do about it? Let's figure it out and let's move on. That's the only way to go, because whether you drink about it, whether you cuss about it, whether you punch a hole in the drywall about it, it still happened and you still have to figure it the fuck out and move on with your life.
Yeah, man. I love that you brought up the media part. I think it's something that, you know, we're so conditioned with, like you said. Every commercial that you see is, you know, somebody having a rough day and oh, there's the ice cold Budweiser to ease my pains. And oh, or hey, everybody's having a good time at the beach and everybody's got a nice frosty Corona in their hand and everything's fine and well.
Sometimes you wanna go where everybody knows your name.
Yeah, dude, that was me, man. Stockman's and the San Juan Club. Everybody knew who I was. I was a guy who drank Pabst and smelled like shit. It's not anything to be excited about.
Punched
by bums. I mean, all kinds of crazy shit, dude. So, I mean, it's kind of sad that society has still decided to go down that route. And I understand that it's just advertiser money, but the damage that this does to people by, you know, subconsciously jamming it up our asses with every other commercial and teaching you that this is how you're supposed to deal with normal human emotions and trials and tribulations is actually just really, really fucking sad, because there is an easier, softer way. And it's just looking in the mirror and figuring it out. Like you said, there is a solution, and it doesn't, it's not found at the bottom of a booze bottle. I can promise you that, or the end of a needle, or the end of a bowl that you're smoking. It's just not. Like you said, I will reiterate that as well. That problem's only going to accentuate because you're not handling it. You're putting it off. You're pretending it doesn't exist. And what happens to problems? They continue to just spiral and they continue to get worse. And you're not helping the cause. So I'm glad that you said that, man. That's a very important point.
Yeah. So the next one I have is, I think, a huge one. I know I experienced it. And I have here shame or fear of stigma and like fear of other people's opinions. There's a few like really simple answers to this to me. One is fuck what other people think. They can suck the biggest dick on the planet and fuck right off. If you're choosing to do something for your health and someone doesn't like it, like literally go fuck yourself. A, and B, our disease is one of self-aggrandizement, selfish, self-centered. We're self-centered.
Sorry.
We're very self-centered. And along with that comes what? Everybody is going to be so worried that I'm not drinking. No one's going to be able to have fun without me. Everyone is going to ask me why I'm not drinking. And guess what I found 99 times out of 100? People go, oh, that's cool. Yeah, anyway, I was watching the basketball game the other night. Or they don't ask at all. Or they don't give a fuck. I mean, some people, you'll have those people that are like, oh, come on, man, have a drink with us. That's usually like a younger crowd. Which when you're younger, it is a little bit harder. But, you know, if you're not comfortable saying I am an alcoholic or I have a problem, say something in this day and age like, oh, I'm doing 75 hard. I'm doing a 30-day no drinking challenge. Oh, I'm working on my health. Or, oh, it's none of your fucking business. I don't feel like drinking tonight. Like, it's really simple. It's really not, there's a lot of ways to get around it. And you can just say, hey, man, I'm actually on this gym kick and I'm on this little diet and I'm just really trying to get my shit tight for summertime. And so I'm not going to drink tonight. Like, it's really not this crazy convoluted thing that we often make up in our head.
You know what, man? That's a great, great point, man. You're firing on all cylinders today. You all jacked up on Mucinex still, dude. You're lucid and just bringing heat, man. I'm singing your praises over here. Oh, it's the fucking V8, dude. I should have known, dude.
Come on,
sponsor us, V8. We're still here.
I am fueled up with more than 100% of my vegetables and fruit servings for the day, my friend.
Natural green tea energy.
I mean, not to mention, I've got vitamin C, vitamin B, vitamin A, niacin,
it's got it all, man.
B6, yeah, B12, it's got it. Potassium. It's got to be the potassium really kicking me in the high gear.
I'm telling you what, man, no one's cramping over there in your house, dude, right? So the thing I was going to say was the shame, right? I had this idea of what an alcoholic was because I had alcoholic family members. So the fact that I could ever say that I was one of those people was a huge fucking issue for me, man. I thought that was the biggest, you know, walk of shame. Oh, look at me, Cameron, the guy who could drink 7,000 beers and has DUIs and nobody wants to be around him because he's a fucking asshole. Lo and behold, he's an alcoholic. I knew it the whole time and all the shame that came with that. Lo and behold, man, like you said, nobody gave a fuck. Nobody cares. Nobody gives two shits about what's going on. And I'm glad that you highlighted it's kind of hip to do this whole, I'm doing this fitness challenge, man. I'm not drinking for 90 days. I'm trying to get jacked. You know what, man? People are way more receptive to that these days than they ever have been. So if you are not ready to walk out and be boisterous with it, like say a person like Hen and I are, people ask me and I just tell them, yeah, I don't drink anymore. I'm an alcoholic. Simple as that. You know, and if you have questions, I'll gladly talk to you about it. Hey, here's a podcast. It's called Rude Dude. Subscribe, like, and follow. You know, and it's really that simple, man. And I really like how you hammered home that people's opinions really don't matter. This is an episode that's really kind of turning into do what is right by you. Do what's right by you. And if something is telling you on the inside and that's what's holding you back, like, hey, there's going to be shame in it. I'm going to have to admit that I was defeated by this substance. Don't look at it that way. Don't look at it that way. The strongest of strong people in this world have been defeated by these substances, and they continue to every day, happening 24/7. So, yeah, man, that's what I got to say.
Dude, that is a great point. I'm glad you brought that up because I didn't have that in my notes, but you just reminded me, every fucking buddy that you know, everybody that you're worried about judging you, has 1 or 2 degrees separation from an alcoholic or an addict. Mm-hmm. More often, every time I always worried like, oh, I'm embarrassed, I'm shameful. Every fucking time, I'm pretty sure every time I've told a stranger, like, you know, on a plane, they ask whatever, oh, I'm in recovery. They go, great job. Congratulations. I'm proud of you.
Dude.
My cousin is an alcoholic. My uncle, my grandma died of, you know what I mean? Every fucking time. I never got shamed and I've always gotten like, hey, good for you. I'm proud of you.
Dude, you know what, man? What a revelation. Actually, now that I sit here and I think about that, I have only gotten praised for opening up and saying that I'm in recovery. And it's because people always have a story. Yeah, my grandfather was an alcoholic. He was mean and terrible. And I'm proud of you for not doing that. You know what I mean? These people don't know me for shit. But just the fact that we are taking the conscious act to not be that is actually something to be proud of. So we're spinning this little segment or this little section on its head. There's no shame in it, man. There's actually a whole bunch of pride when you can see the other side of it. Right. I'm proud of being sober, right? Because there's about 99% of the world that isn't doing this, and they refuse to see the things that we're talking about. Hell yeah, dude. Great point.
It takes some gumption that a lot of people don't have. Like, and it doesn't matter what it is you're doing. In order to, like, quit something, my sister compared it to sugar. She was like, I'm so impressed by you guys. Like, if someone told me I couldn't have cake anymore or sugar at all, I would have a really fucking hard time with that. And so that's the thing, is like, we're doing something difficult that we know is good for us. And why should anybody not, you know, have some respect for that?
Dude, actually, you know what was funny? I don't know the words verbatim, but I remember listening to a Huberman Lab episode where he talked about how special recovering addicts and alcoholics actually are, for the just on the sheer principle of rapid transformation that people like us have to go through to sustain sobriety. Like, normal human beings don't do it, and they're trying to figure out why that is, because he's that Stanford, you know, brain scientist. He just talks about how special it is that somebody can completely change their entire outlook on their lives, something they were so dependent on, and flip it around on its head. That's not a normal thing, and it's something to be celebrated. It's something to be celebrated, because people can get stuck in comfortability no matter if it's killing them or not, and that's the reality of our disease, at least. So yeah, hats off to that, man. I'm glad you pointed that out, man. That put some warm and fuzzies in me. Everybody I've talked to about getting sober is super jacked for me, actually. They're super stoked.
And like you pointed out, in this day and age, it's not weird. Like, 10 years ago, it was a little weird or whatever, but in this day and age, it'd be like, oh my God, that is so cool, because my mother stomps on barley seeds and makes vegan juices, and she's completely sober. You know what I mean? Like, it's everybody's doing it. Like,
vegan barley juices, dude.
You get it. I mean, you get it.
I mean, the visuals there, dude. I just see some lady in a tie-dye dress.
My mom
stomping
sprouts
barefoot
vegan sunflowers from her anus and creates. And it's 100% alcohol free,
and that's all because she doesn't drink or do drugs. It's all fantastic.
That's awesome, cool breeze. I'm so happy for you.
That's awesome, there, my Manji. You take care, all right, brother. I like your crystal necklace.
It's ma'am. All right, here we go. What is the biggest one, brother? What is the biggest one? How am I gonna have fun? I'm never gonna have fun again, Cameron. How will I ever have fun?
Dude, this one, I think I've said this 3 times now. I think all of them were really just so paramount for me. Yeah, I used them as all the excuses why I couldn't get sober. But how was I ever going to have fun? Every single fun time I had since I discovered alcohol and drugs involved alcohol and drugs. So I had no idea what that was going to look like. And what I would tell myself on a regular and consistent basis was, that cannot exist. Fun cannot exist unless I am fucked up. You want to go to a 4th of July parade? Well, how early can I start drinking beers and being loaded? I can't possibly watch fireworks without being loaded. Hey, my birthday. How is that going to be fun? Oh, well, I can't celebrate if I'm not drinking.
Holidays have a 7 a.m. acceptable start drinking time.
Camping. Oh, friends coming into town.
As soon as you wake up.
Yeah, I mean, all these things. How am I ever going to do that without being loaded? Huge obstacle. And I actually am sitting here, and I am living proof of this. You can have a whole bunch of fun, man. We've talked about this on the podcast. My wedding, man, I was sober as a judge on my goddamn wedding, which I wouldn't even tell you on any planet that would have been a reality. Dude, I had more fun than I'd had in a million years on the dance floor, dancing with my friends, sober as a goddamn judge, bro.
That was so
fun. We had alcohol there for people who wanted to drink. Ready? So there's a testament to sobriety and that this stuff works. People were drinking beers, having fun, but I was out there with my boys, sober, dancing with my wife, laughing my ass off, having a blast. So you can do it. It does sound intimidating in the beginning, though, bro. Tell me you felt the same way, because, dude, that it just sounds impossible when you're deep in it, man.
I really think that's like the number one go-to, because, again, I think this goes back to like the media and all that, where we've been conditioned that fun involves alcohol. One of the things that I was going to say is I've been to rehab 4 or 5 times. And one of a really common thing that I've heard happen in rehab is we just laugh and laugh and laugh our asses off. And people go, dude, I've never laughed this hard in my life. Because you're having like true fun, true joy. It's not like all this blurry, forget, bullshit stuff that talking about nothing, like actually purely laughing from a pure place of joy. So that was one thing I was thinking about, is a good belly laugh when you're sober is like so incredible. And the other kind of point I wanted to hammer home a little bit is that I have spent so much money on concerts and sporting events that I do not fucking remember. Like, I always use this example where I went to the 49ers game and people would be like, oh man, did you see that one play where the da-da-da-da the next day? And I would be like, to be honest, no. Like, I went to this, I think it was Trey Songz, and I couldn't tell you, like, I could not tell you one song that he played. I couldn't tell you the first song he played. Like, I was blacked out by the time we sat down and don't remember anything. And the same thing happened for a Chris Brown concert. This was in like the same period with the same girlfriend. So I remember I was pretty bad off. Nothing. I remember zero. And there's fucking like $1,000 almost in tickets right there. How fucking fun is that? Did I have fun? Now I can tell you, I've been to a lot of sports events and concerts sober, and it's fucking awesome. And I can tell you every song they played, and I can tell you what the look in my girlfriend's eyes when her favorite song came on was. And you know what I mean? Like, that is fucking fun. That is awesome. Having memories that I can remember and like having belly laughs because I'm truly, genuinely happy. That is fun.
I think the greatest thing that you said is how the film kind of comes off your eyes, right? When you're sober and you can actually kind of enjoy life for what it truly is, instead of this fake inebriated, you know, chemical cocktail you got going on swirling around in your brain. And when you can finally kind of appreciate, you know, life for what it is and humor for what it really is, like if something's genuinely funny and you're hearing people sit there and laugh about it, and having those good belly laughs, that's the greatest stuff, man. Sober, it really is. It's unbeatable, man, because there's nothing more pure. There's nothing more pure. There's no substance causing this laugh. This is me and another human being or a group of human beings enjoying one of life's greatest treasures, you know, deep laughter, smiling, tears rolling down your face. And it's not because we're loaded. I do love the concert deal because you know what, man, I just use those events as an excuse to get fucked up. Right. I wasn't even concerned about actually going to see the musician or going to the sporting event. I just knew that I was going to get loaded all the way out there during and after. And that's all I did. I'm with you on that. I can't remember 95% of any musical shows that I went to during my active addiction. It was just an excuse to get fucked up the entire time.
And here's the thing too. It will take you a little bit to be comfortable being yourself. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the big things is like, oh, it loosens me up. I'm shy otherwise. But I've had people, a lot of people like, this motherfucker must be fucked up when I'm dead sober because I'm having a blasty blast being goofy as hell because I'm comfortable being myself. But and that is a skill and it's learned and it's practiced and it takes a little work. So will you be a little uncomfortable and awkward at first? Yeah, you probably will. But once you do it a few times and you put a little practice into it and you get used to it, it's more fun being yourself and being in control and having that sober fun.
Yeah, man. I think that's another great point. Trust the process, right? Because you're having to relearn who you are. You're having to relearn who you are. Or in certain circumstances, like I know for me, I was trying to discover who I was for the first time, right? I thought I knew who I was, right? I mean, hey, I'm Cameron, you know, I'm this funny guy who gets kind of touchy and I'll slap you and, you know, I'm kind of loud and I say the F word every other 5 seconds. But as time progressed on, I started finding things out about myself that I didn't know, you know? Hey, the guy who liked to talk all the time when he was drunk and all that type of shit, now when I go to events, I'm one of the more closed mouth type of people nowadays, right? Like there's a personality change. There's a thing. And it's not that I don't want to talk. It's just, this is who I am, right? The alcohol made me that chatty Cathy and thinking that that's
and
what
everybody
wanted.
And everybody wished you would shut the fuck up probably.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, dude. Ashley's family actually said like, dude, they could not stand me because I would interrupt nonstop and I'd get really touchy. I'd get really touchy and I'd sit there and I'd grab people's shoulders, you know, like thinking I'm being funny and shit when I'm really just being this obnoxious fucking asshole.
I can think of you annoying me like that. Like, bro, get the fuck off me.
I remember one of I didn't sound like that, pal, but I would fuck with you. Made me sound like I got Down syndrome. What the fuck is that, dude? I remember one of our friends, man, every time I'd get too drunk, I'd get kind of slappy. Like when a joke would come, I'd slap you on the chest and he'd literally be like, yeah. And he'd hit me back like hell hard, dude, every time. I pissed him off so much, dude. Plus, so much.
Dude. Case in point, do me and Cameron sound like we don't have fun? Like how much fun do we have? All the goddamn time.
And all the time, man.
I think the final point I'm going to make on this is also, your idea of fun might change a little bit. Your activities might change a little bit. Instead of pulling a marathon and sitting on a bar stool for 9 fucking hours, maybe take your lady to the city and go to a fucking art show or a museum or take a fucking hike or do something that has value and enriches your life and makes you happy and that you can wake up the next day proud that you did, instead of being like, man, I've sat on a bar stool for 12 hours yesterday and I feel like fucking shit. And now I got to go to work. Like, oh, that was so cool. We went to Pittsburgh. We had an awesome meal and we went to the Academy of Science. Like, change your activities. You'll have a different kind of fun. There's still fun out there to be had. Moral of the story. You just got to find it. What else do we got going on, Cam?
So I see a little thing on dating. What was that like? I imagine that was kind of a struggle for you and kind of a worry when it came to like getting sober, right? Like I didn't have to experience that.
So dating is a huge one, and I know it wasn't just me. A lot of my friends that I talked to went through the same thing, and here's why. Because the very first thing that anyone says on a dating site when they want to meet up is,
let's go get a drink.
Do you want to go have a drink? Exactly. And so we can work this up in our mind to be this huge deal, but I think we kind of touched on this earlier, which is one thing that it's becoming more widespread. It's becoming more acceptable. It's becoming more common to where I don't think it's something we need to worry about as much as we do. A and B, the way I made peace with it with myself was to say, man, if it's that big of a problem to someone that I don't drink, that's probably not a person I want to look at like spending the rest of my life with.
Facts.
I don't care if people drink, but if drinking is so important to you that you won't go on a date with me because I don't drink, we probably don't have anything to talk about or don't have anything in common. Like if drinking is so important to someone that they stop talking to you when you say, I don't drink, that's a red flag to me. So you just did me a favor by unmatching me because I don't drink. But there's ways around it. If you're worried about it, my policy was to get it out within the first, like, pretty early on. Be like, hey, you know what? I don't, and especially if it came up, you want to get a drink? Actually, I don't drink. I don't mind if you do, but I don't. So if you want to meet up, we can, but I won't be having a drink, just so you know. And just lay it out there. Mm-hmm. And most people are cool with it. And if they're not cool with it, like I said, probably not the best partner.
I can see how that could be a big issue, but when you use your sober brain and you sit there and you think about it, you said it perfectly. If somebody has an issue with me not drinking, that's not a person you need to be with. And you, it's at your own discrepancy. I don't care if it's the most attractive person on the planet. That's not going to be conducive to you maintaining your sobriety and continuing to excel in the life that you're choosing to create for yourself. So if somebody has a problem with who you are, then you just need to go in the famous words of on to the next one, on to the next one, on to the next one, on to the next one. All right, dude. So like we don't need to be worrying about that.
This also turned into a policy of like if every girl in like 7 of their 10 pictures was like at a party holding up a drink, I was like, yeah, she's probably not the one for you, dog.
No, man. And those are people that are still stuck
in
that party.
For the streets.
She's for the streets, man. And if that's your entire personality, then I want no part of it. And that's why I'm blessed that, you know, my wife leaving me or my girlfriend at the time leaving me was the final push for me to to get sober, because then I didn't have to experience that, because then I just got clean, and then we ended up having a kid and getting married. So I know that's a big deal for people, though.
So for dating, I guess we'll just sum it up. We kind of, it's kind of the stuff we touched on before. Be honest up front about it. Get it out of the way. And if it's something that somebody has a problem with, that person might not be at the maturity level that you're looking for.
I don't know what movie this is, but it's with Ryan Reynolds, and the mom literally sings, "Be yourself, be yourself." It's where he's like fat.
Is it the one where he's
back.
Fat and grows up?
Yeah. Be yourself. That's it, man. Be yourself. Stay true to what you want to do. Achieve your goals that way. And if sobriety is a life that you want, then go and get it. And you did. I mean, one small fun night with some random floozy, is not worth jeopardizing that new life. And I'll die on that hill, man. So, yeah, I could see how that could be a huge issue, though, man. I really do.
I got to touch on this because it's tied to dating, and it's a little uncomfortable to talk about, but it's a reality. Mm. And it's another one that I know my brothers especially were concerned about, and that's having sex sober. And women, too. I mean, to be honest, having sex bone dry sober is like a little bit, it's a little different. Like with a new person when you've never done it before. a new person you're dating, and
yeah, bone dry sober. I love it, dude.
Bone dry sober. Make sure the sex isn't dry. Get that KY. Sponsor us, KY. Yeah, so it's a little weird. I'll be honest, it's a little different, and but you get used to it, and it's okay, and you remember it. And fellas, let's be honest. What are we worried about? Bussing quick. And guess what? You probably fucking will. So. That's just something you need to, you know, with practice, it gets better. It does get better. If you've only ever had drunk sex your whole life, you're probably going to bust quick the first time you have sex sober. I'm just being honest.
Dude, I'm so glad you brought that up, dude, because that was going to be my next thing. I think the most traumatic part of that is I used to literally be Mr. Marathon Man. Like I could just go for 5 trillion hours because I was so fucking drunk, dude.
Yeah, dude.
I'm over there sweating, about to die, like ready to pop an artery. And then when I first got sober, yeah, I was like, oh, hey, this is what this feels like. I felt like I was a virgin again. Be like, oh, hey, all right, boom, bing, bing, bang. All right, good night. It's been real, dude. Bada boom.
And you're like, ooh, man, I was so disappointed. Awesome.
Yeah, I'd be like, holy smokes, what is this? This is what everybody likes. No, dude, it was a big problem. It was a big problem in the beginning. I remember I'd fervently like apologize, be like, I'm better than this. I was like, I'm better than this. I swear I'm better than this.
But gentlemen, there are workarounds, you know, get an extra thick raincoat. They also make like a numbing spray. They also make the numbing condom type things. There are workarounds, gentlemen. If you're worried about it, it's not worth your sobriety.
It does stabilize too. Now I'm not what I once was when I first got sober, but yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. When I first got sober, dude, I was like, I felt like I was 15 years old again, dude. I was like, what the fuck is going on, bro? I was like ashamed. I like walked out. I was like, I'm sorry.
I gotta be honest, man, because if people are genuinely listening to this and they're concerned, especially dudes, like this is on their mind. The dating and the sex is 100% on their mind, and it's a thing, but it gets better. And it's not worth your sobriety, man.
Yeah. Hey, I'm glad you brought it up. Long story short, these are a whole bunch of concerns that we all had. Henry and I had these concerns. But for me, in the end, I couldn't even tell you what was bothering me and what was holding me back. I didn't even know who I was, what was going on, what I wanted, how I was going to get there. And all these things that Hen and I just talked about were these wonderful excuses that I would cling on to thinking that was the reason why.
Yep.
Because that's all they are. They are all just excuses. And when I sit back and I think about, you know, where I was at that time, I try to remember the misery, you know, that state of mind was. I couldn't tell you if I was coming or going. I was making all these excuses why I couldn't change my life. And it was a sad, sad, sad state to be in. And I think that's why us in recovery, at least for me, when I see people go back out, like I there's people around here who have gone back out and they actively, you know, are just actively running and gunning. I think that's why it hurts so bad, because they're willingly choosing to go back to that misery like I just talked about, right? And then they're back feeding these same excuses, thinking that they're different and thinking that something's going to change. and all these crazy things, and they're living at the bar, and they're doing all these things, and it's just, why would you want to go back to that misery? The point I'm trying to make is if you're struggling with any of these things that we talked about, you can get out of it. And there is another side to it. Hen and I are testaments to it. And don't let these little flimsy bullshit excuses that your mind and the old devil gipper likes to tell you scare you away from being who you are and who you are truly meant to be. A wonderful person, clear-eyed, who you want to be. Go and get it. Go and get it. Stop self-medicating. Talk to us. Talk to somebody. Get the help that you need. And fulfill your wildest dreams, because it's on the other side of setting that substance down.
Well said, man. I think that's such a great point, because when it comes down to it, what are all these things? They're fucking excuses. The thing that you made me think of is there will always be that next event. There will always be, oh, well, I'll wait till after the wedding. I'll wait till after the vacation. I'll wait till after And I did that with bad relationships where I knew I needed to get out, but I gave myself excuses where I was like, oh, well, we're going to Tahoe this weekend. So after the Tahoe, oh, well, we got the thing with their parents coming up and that'll be fun. Oh, and you're just prolonging the inevitable and you're just putting off something that you know you need to do. So any of these things here that you're concerned about are simply excuses for you to not do it. And the point I'm trying to make is there will always be another one. You know, Cameron and I put off doing this podcast for like 2 years, I think, until one day we just said, let's fucking do it. We're recording tomorrow. Let's do it. And we did it and we jumped in. There's always an excuse to not do something scary, but it always feels better when you have visitors. Hi, Lindy. You want to say hi?
Hey, Lindy.
Hi.
Hi. I got an owl hat on.
Say welcome to Rude Dude.
Welcome to Rude Dude.
Ooh, there we go.
I'm almost done, baby. There will always be another reason, another excuse, another piece of bullshit to hold you back from achieving your goal. But
yep.
At some point, you take a stand and you say, this is what I want to do, and I'm doing it starting today.
Enough is enough, and that's all it is. So, like I said, I'll reiterate it. If you are struggling and you want to talk, reach out to us because I'm sure all of your excuses, Hen and I have mulled them over more than a few times. And if we haven't, we can further reiterate that it is just another excuse and that you can do it. So let's get the fuck up out of here, brother. What do we have for him this week?
Well, it was brought to my attention that the support this podcast thing is a little bit hard to find. So this week, we're going to explain. So it's in Spotify. If you're listening in Spotify, or if you're super awesome and radical and you don't listen in Spotify, but you want to support us. So in Spotify, you go to our main podcast page, and then you click the About tab at the top. It says episodes about or more like this. You go to the About, and then there's a link at the bottom of the description, which takes you to the page where you are able to become a supporter. And if you want to do 99 cents a month, $4.99 or $9.99, you are the coolest person ever. And we love you eternally. So there's your directions. If you're interested in that, that's how you do it.
Yes, please support us. There's also another route. You can, when you look into the show description in the show notes, you have to go all the way down. It's down at the bottom of each show in Spotify. So you'll go down, you'll see where we have our... There's even a send a voice message thing. So if you want to send us little voice messages, send us one. We'll put you on the podcast.
That would be rad.
It's all the way at the bottom. So yes, thank you, Henry, for explaining that, because some people had asked. So I will finish it like I always do, man, unless you got something else to say. You got something else to say?
No, sir. All right.
Look at us, dude. Tighter than a tiger. I love it. I love you, Hen. It's good to see you. I love your Hawaiian shirt, and I love your little tiger. Rawr, buddy.
And remember, we can't have any fun on this outro because we're sober, so no fun will be had. This is the no fun zone. Sober, no fun zone. Be yourself and fuck what they talking about.
Here's the no fun version.
Nah, shrimp man, hit him again.
Later, dude. I'm not an MC with the music. I'm here, Eagle Eye. I'm not a puppy, then boy.